Hi, everyone. This is Tracy from NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. Co-parenting with a narcissist is one of the hardest challenges that you can have. It's a high conflict co-parenting situation, and the rules are not what everyone else thinks. So often you're getting advice from your friends that isn't going to be appropriate for dealing with the kind of cray-cray that you're dealing with. I brought in a guest today. She is the co-founder of the High Conflict Institute in San Diego with Bill Eddy. So those of you who have ever seen my video with Bill Eddy, he is the author of Splitting and a whole bunch of other books, including Biff, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes on this video. We must learn to communicate with them. We must learn to what to expect, and we must learn to protect ourselves before we get into the co-parenting situation. If your divorce is running off the railroad tracks here, it may seem like I've got to do one more thing. I've got to, you know, put all this extra parenting stuff into this effort when you just want to stop the divorce. But planning these things before you get into a situation is going to be your salvation. And getting some really helpful information from Megan today as she talks about her book on co-parenting with a high conflict person. So let's welcome Megan.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm just really, really thrilled to be on your show, and especially to know that there are shows like yours out there that are really helping people.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I have a background in business, which might seem a little odd that I'm talking about high conflict personalities and high conflict divorce and child custody. But the short version is I was in Nebraska working at a part-time job for a county attorney enforcing child support, and just fell in love with working with people and mediation and just trying to get parents to agree to child support. And eventually that led me to become the child support specialist for the Arizona Supreme Court for a few years, but that was more policy and legislation, but not direct involvement with parents. But so I got kind of the bigger picture. And then I kind of was watching my coworker, who was the family law specialist, and I really liked what she was doing. At the time I didn't know why so much, but in hindsight I realized it was because of the mix of psychology and just, you know, human relationships and human dynamics, and not understanding why there were high conflict divorces and high conflict custody cases that no one could figure out. So when she retired, I ended up getting that position, and I just fell in love with high conflict work. So I got more curious about why can't we figure out, you know, why can't we really, really, truly help families in these high conflict crisis situations? They're the most difficult situations people are ever in, really, in my opinion. You know, the threat of losing your children, perhaps, and things like that. So I made it my mission to find someone that had, you know, could understand what was happening within these families. And I eventually came across a man named Bill Eddy, who had been a therapist. I know you're familiar with him.
I am.
a therapist and a mediator and a lawyer, family lawyer. And he began to really understand and put together techniques that would help people in situations, or the people who are the professionals who are dealing with these folks through the court system and law. So I left the Arizona Supreme Court, and Bill and I started the High Conflict Institute together in 2008, and we have been training professionals all over the world ever since.
That's an amazing journey. I think everyone doesn't set out in their life to go, oh, I'm going to go help high conflict people.
Right.
Or did I ever dream I'm going to go help victims of abuse? But our situations, like, you know, lead us to it. And for me, the passion is so powerful that someone can have a light bulb go off and their life can be literally changed in an instant. And so I know that what you're doing is so important, and I thank you so much. But as you have been on the divorce end and then watching it go into the family dynamic, can you, like, identify if there's a pattern? If someone has been in a high conflict divorce, and you know, my channel is about narcissists, but it could be anyone that's that that abuser, if you would. Does that mean by necessarily they will have a high conflict co-parenting sort of situation?
I would say yes. I don't know how you couldn't, unless you just walked away from the kids, you know, and the family. Because these patterns of behavior are chronic. They've been developing over a lifetime. And I call it, I've come to develop sort of a theory or concept or a way to explain it as we all have an operating system. And that operating system kind of dictates whether we're going to be good in relationships or not so good in relationships. So I call this sort of a complicated operating system for those who may have that narcissistic quality trait, behaviors, borderline, antisocial, histrionic, or paranoid. They've been, you know, developing, like I said, for a long, long time. So to expect that if you've been in a high conflict divorce and you finally have that decree and that parenting plan and the court part is over, if you think the road ahead is going to be easy, it probably won't be, because those same personality patterns are going to prevail. And with the narcissistic personality, you know, they're driven by fear of feeling inferior. So anytime they feel inferior, they need to go back to feeling superior instantly. If that anxiety builds, it's just how the operating system works for them. And so they have to put you down, they have to win, they have to brag, but, you know, go as far as violence in some situations. So yeah, long answer to, it's probably going to be a long road.
Yeah, I know. I see it every day. I talk to parents, both male and female, that are dealing with, you know, a lifetime or at least 18 years, if the children are very young, of you know, working with them. And I know there's going to be ways to manage that going forward. But can you talk about some of the biggest challenges that people might expect and maybe prevent by making some decisions earlier in the divorce? Because I've had people where the decisions were made in the divorce, but because there was so much chaos and so much drama and you're putting out fires in the divorce and you're just trying to get through it, that, well, what happens now? We didn't make arrangements for a talking parent or a family wizard, or now what do they do? So they're sort of, can we stop them from getting into that situation where, like, oh my God, now we're in it and I'm dealing with this other stuff and he's taking me back to court or she's doing this to me? Can you give us some of those examples of what you think is most common obstacles they might face and should prepare for?
Once you get into the court system in divorce court, or if you're never married and you just, you know, you go to the court for separation and a determination of child custody and parenting time, things like that, you know, once you're in that system, because it's an adversarial system by nature, it's going to make the relationship even worse, because now the fight escalates even more and continues escalating. And what we found is a lot of, with this true high conflict personality that has this pattern of behavior with four key characteristics, you know, they're going to keep acting that way even if they've gone to a parent education class. Because the states have developed, and worldwide, there are mandated parent education programs. But lecturing doesn't help. What helps is these books learning some new skills. So we believe in early intervention. When a case is filed, we've developed a program called New Ways for Families that puts a pause on the case and helps both parents develop new relationship skills, these four skills about managing your emotions, having moderate behaviors, having flexible thinking instead of all or nothing thinking, and then just being able to check yourself. And then we have them teach those skills to their children. And that's really where we learn best, right? When we're teaching someone else and we have to use those, we can have those light bulb moments. It's not a cure-all, but it's something that we're doing to kind of help humanity, really, in the divorce context, and so that the children don't get destroyed. Other things that are a good idea is you don't want to get into, you know, a lot of back and forth and these wars. You really need to learn to use what we call ear statements, meaning when you're upset and you're hooked emotionally, which you're probably going to be when you're dealing with someone with narcissism or any of these, you're emotionally hooked, there's some stuff going on, you know, kind of, I call it Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi, brain to brain, that you don't even know what's happening. But it's making you feel terrible and it's making you want to fight, right? Or get the heck out and not even engage, or stay in it, which you probably need to do, depending on the circumstances. But you need to have a plan, you need to have structure, and you need to learn to unhook. And if you get hooked, you gotta step back and you know, choose your time. Don't argue, but use what we call empathy, attention, and respect, right? Just a combination of any of that, like, I get what you're saying. Let me take that under consideration, and you know, we can figure this out as we're going along the, you know, parenting plan mediation path. So it's a real skill, and you know, if you're in a domestic violence situation, of course, you have to have protections. And those kind of guys. So I don't want to say if you're in a DV situation that you just use ear all the time and it's going to be this wonderful life. But there are a lot of things we've taught thousands of people over the years where if they learn to use ear, and it even includes your tone of voice, your facial expression, and your body language, that can really have an impact on that other person's brain. And when their brain is feeling calmer, they can think more. When you're thinking, you are calmer. And so there's a whole lot around that, but a couple little other quick tips is you want to have very detailed plans, parenting plans, because with folks like this, they can really slip through the cracks very easily and find little loopholes and things. So I'd say research parenting plans and several of them and see what all should be included in that parenting plan from today until those children are maybe through college, so that you're not blindsided somewhere down the road. And it can be tough to think of every possible thing, but there are some really good parenting plans out there, and most professionals will know how to access some of those, but do your own research as well.
Yeah. Thank you. That's so helpful, because I was going to discuss the parenting plans. What I have found in so many people that come to me is, you know, the parenting plan mine when I divorced my son's father was Easter, Christmas till he was 18. That was it. You know, there was no discussion of college. There was no discussion of this or that. And even on something as simple as, you know, the spouse saying, oh, I'll pay for college, and stepping up, you know, boldly going, yes, I've got it. If it's not defined as far as, you know, where the child can go, who gets to choose where the child goes? I have seen people who, you know, father said, oh, I'll pay for it. And then the problem comes in where the kid got into Brown and the father goes, oh, well, I was only going to pay for state school. And it becomes a battle. So laying out every single detail is harder to push through. I understand that. In the divorce, they're going to be like, why are you thinking about these things now? You know, it's just going to be another jab. But you're already in the court battle of a divorce. So in many ways, that is your time. Because going back retroactively is never easy. And again, becomes this huge expense. So, you know, trying to define every single detail is, I think, one of your best protections. But again, the other thing I see people doing is that under 18 kind of thing. And they're going, well, little Johnny's in a preschool now, so I want him to pay half of preschool. And then the reality is, well, what happens when he does this as a teenager, gets involved in sports? How does the child's sports affect the parenting, you know, the person that's going to have them, you know, on that weekend? Do they just get to keep them and isolate them and not take them to soccer practice, because that gets them kicked off the team? Those things have to be worked out, because any loophole is another vulnerability of a fight and a war later on.
Right. And you know, we kind of joke that these folks are sort of frequent filers, like frequent flyers, but they're frequent filers, right? It's back to court, back to court, instead of being able to work things out among yourself. Most divorcing people, the majority, probably 80%, can, you know, work things out either amongst themselves, between themselves, or with a lawyer or a mediator or a parenting coordinator. But, you know, that 80% probably won't need a parenting coordinator because they can't work things out. It's those that sort of have this pattern of high conflict behavior, those bare four characteristics that seem to come back to court and back to court over every little thing, and need all these decisions. Or they just go ahead and do whatever they want, you know, move across town, across the city, making it impossible for the child to go to soccer practice with their original soccer team. Just a million little things. So you can't really plan for everything. You can't anticipate everything, especially if you have preschoolers when you're separating and divorcing, you know, developing a parenting plan. How do you know what's going to happen? You know, I was divorced when my children were young, and I had no idea what to anticipate when they were junior high, teenagers, things like that. So you can't anticipate it. So you have to develop, you know, sort of a bigger plan of how you're going to deal with situations as they come up. You know, how can I conduct my behavior? How can I manage this relationship so that I'm not miserable, I'm not living in fear, and I'm able to parent my children and focus on their best interests, you know, and not drag them into this dispute, not become their best friend, which we see a lot in divorce, and how to have potentially, you know, a good relationship with the other parent, even if that other parent is, you know, has some pretty serious flaws. Some cases, maybe a parent-child relationship isn't the best thing, you know, in very extreme cases. But for the most part, I think most people should have some kind of relationship. So you don't want to be that parent that alienates that child. Instead, you teach that child the skills they need to have good relationships in life, and then you role model that for them.
Yeah. That's the perfect world. We would like that, wouldn't we?
Yes.
It'd be a nice thing if we all got along and just sort of worked it out for the kids, but you know,
it's hard to do it.
Still calls.
No matter what. In the best of situations, you have a friendship that goes sour, or a neighbor dispute or something. It's really tough, but when it's the other parent of your child, mm-hmm. it's the most intense and confusing. Mm-hmm. Time and relationship, and it, you know, people really go down in a deep hole.
Yeah.
And the calls we get from parents in this situation usually start with, "I'm in a really deep, dark hole, and I don't know how to get out."
Yeah.
You know, so we teach some skills. We have one called BIF, a brief, informative, friendly, and firm. You have the book
within reach.
Oh, there it is. It's a really simple way of writing emails. If you need to respond to an email, one of those hostile, all caps, "You're such a blah, blah, blah," and "You never do this," and, you know, "Our kids hate you," and you're going to get hooked by that. So a BIF response helps you respond, brief, informative, friendly, and firm, and it will really help contain the conflict and help keep the other person calmer. And people who do this regularly, it changes their co-parenting relationship.
Yeah, I have seen where parents learn this technique and come back to me and say, "It's not better, but it doesn't escalate anymore. You know, I know to expect these things and I know how to respond," because every time they do one of these tricks, you're triggered. And so the trigger triggers anger and triggers fear and triggers all of that stuff. So if you can keep the tone of it down, and you know, people get frustrated. "Well, why do I have to change? Why can't he change? Why can't she change?" you know what? You can't change them. So all you can do is really change yourself and the way that you're interacting. And I do think that when you are using skills like this, you are going to be able to manage the relationship a lot better, at least in your own heart and in your own mind. Emotional state is not going to always get escalated every time the phone buzzes, you know? So those are really, really good skills. And I really encourage everyone to go out there and buy that book. I recommend it almost every single day. So
lots of good news, by the way. That book is written for anyone, you know, in any area of life. Later this year, Bill and two co-authors, Annette Burns and Kevin Chapin. Annette is a family law attorney, one of the best in the country, really. And Kevin Chapin, who's a therapist in Kansas City, he teaches BIF to every parent he works with in his work, which is all day, every day. So they're coming out with BIF co-parenting edition.
Nice.
I know, it'll be great. A lot of examples, a lot of scenarios that every co-parent in a high conflict co-parenting situation has to deal with. So I think it'll be super helpful.
That will be a very, very good addition to my shelf.
Good.
I'm so excited. So I want to talk just a little bit more. I don't want to take too much of your time. I appreciate that you're here with me. The financial things, that the traps, if you would, financial traps that parents get into or that kids are used as that sort of trap. What are some things that you've seen that are common? And again, maybe, how do we avoid this?
Like in terms of what parent is going to pay for what, or getting dragged into court and all the legal fees.
Dragged into court and fighting and refusing to pay for Johnny's classes, or, you know, there's always a financial aspect. And I think that affects people to the core, because, you know, when you're divorced, you start this budget and you've got what you've got and you know how to work it. But when you're now thrown into court, I have one lady, she's been to court 12 times and they still have not settled the divorce. It's been 7 years. And how does someone like that, like the court doesn't want to hear her. She's been to 15 lawyers. She has no more money. She, you know, it's a very difficult situation. And all of it is about the financial. How much do the kids need? He hasn't paid a single penny. So how does she fight that?
Yeah, it's tough. No easy answers, because, you know, every court is different. Every judge is different. I would hope that judges would have, sort of tighter controls over that, expedite those a little bit more. But again, we like to say at HCA, at High Conflict Institute, that with high conflict, people with high conflict personalities, the issue is not the issue, right? The personality is the issue. So they can make an issue out of everything and keep it in court. So if you ever hear about, you know, this case has been going 7 years, I've heard of, you know, 10 years, you can go kindergarten through 12th grade and, graduate from high school in the time, almost the time that it takes to get through the court case. You need to find a good professional, you know, a lawyer that understands the high conflict personality. If you get some bulldog lawyer that doesn't, you know, they're going to escalate the conflict instead of manage the conflict and be very clever about, you know, handling the case. So I think that's kind of the number one thing. Find a lawyer that doesn't escalate conflict. And they're out there, but you have to interview them. You have to understand and ask around, you know. Don't go for the bulldog lawyer. I'm not an attorney, so I can't give legal strategy or anything, but it always, for me, comes back to, you know, managing that relationship and how using these techniques to really help you manage them, manage their anxiety, manage their fears, and try to take the wind out of their sails. When I see people doing that by, picking their battles a bit, understanding where they're never going to make progress and understanding where they may have some room to make progress, then, you know, that's where you can make some progress, right? No easy solutions there. a legal battle with, it can just be really, really difficult. And someone who has a fear-based personality, you know, even though they're in the midst of the conflict and really want to, they say they want the divorce, a lot of times they need to hold on to that relationship even through the divorce process, and they'll keep it going forever because having the relationship, even though it's in a divorce and in conflict, is better than not having that chaos and conflict and connection at all. And so they can keep it going. Others really need to win. So it's about understanding the personalities and learning how to manage them and really getting an attorney that does. Bill wrote a book called High Conflict People in Legal Disputes, and that would be a book you'd want your attorney to read and understand and subscribe to those, just understanding and putting those skills to practice in the case.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's helpful. I know that what people don't often do, and I catch them as they haven't done it because they come into me going, it is document. You know, if you're in a legal situation and you're in this custody battle from hell, it's important to document things. If the parent has not picked up the child, you know, 15 times in the last 2 months when they were supposed to, or they were late, it's frustrating. But we're having a piece of paper in front of a judge that says, here's all the dates, here's the evidence, you know, it helps you versus, oh, she doesn't ever do this. That is just an emotional thing. Proof and evidence is your power in court. So documenting things that are going wrong. And I always tell people to take the emotion out of that documentation. It's not like she did this and he did that. Blah, 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 blah. It's didn't pick up for school, left children at school, blank, blank.
And fact.
So that a judge will take that information and go, okay, thank you for this evidence. I'll take it into consideration. Because you just saying it doesn't have the dates, doesn't have the times. These are important. So I think making sure that people document things is going to help them have a smoother ride, because now it's not your word against theirs. It's paper against proof and evidence against something that's being, you're being accused of.
So. You are absolutely 100% correct. We're in contact with a company based in Seattle, Washington, here in the U.S., that has developed exactly that type of software for this type of case. And it's called EVDENSE. So capital E, capital V, capital D, E-N-S-E. And you can get to it through our website at highconflictinstitute.com. But what they've done is developed this software where you can upload text messages, you can upload court documents, document the pickups and the drop offs and all of those things. And then what it does is lays it all out on what they call a pattern viewer. So they take all that documentation evidence, right? And all those data points and put it together on a timeline, and it can show kind of who's doing what, right? Who's doing the messing up the drop offs? Who's, you know, not complying with the court orders? Who's filing the or calling the police? Who's calling the Department of Child Services reporting constantly? And it's pretty fascinating to have that actual kind of data. So say, look, court, you be the judge. Here's the evidence, you know, as I know it, as I've uploaded it, it's factual. And you can see the patterns.
I love that. I am going to go check it out on your site when we get off so that I can tell people about it. That sounds exactly the tool that they need, sort of like My Family Wizard or the parenting apps. That was built on this niche. And if there's some other tool that can make their life simpler, this is a brilliant thing. So thank you for sharing that.
You bet.
Do you want to tell us quickly how, I think you've got some books to show us, right? I want that. And then tell people how they can reach you or how they can, you know, learn more at the High Conflict Institute website and what's there for them.
Okay. So after working with High Conflict Divorce and Law, you know, we've kind of expanded into all other areas because it turns out all these people have jobs and live in communities and have neighbors and other family. And so we do a lot of training all over, but one thing that we haven't really focused on, I don't think anyone a whole lot has, is the self-care of the person involved in this high conflict, you know, co-parenting relationship. So another gal that works with us at HCI, Andrea LaRochelle, she's a high conflict strategist. She and I wrote this book together. Mostly she wrote it because I was pretty busy, but the High Conflict Co-Parenting Survival Guide. We had some success in some other areas. I have a small publishing company, and we published a book called The Dialectical Behavior Therapy Wellness Plan. It's a daily planner that can help people really take care of themselves, and it's been really successful. So we tried to do kind of the same thing here, and so it's kind of a weekly, some ideas and things you can do. Like this one is about trust. We lose a lot of trust in this high conflict relationship after we've had a relationship like this. And then, you know, some checklists every week of taking care of yourself and questions to ask yourself and things like that. So that's brand new in 2019. And then because we have been doing high conflict divorce work for so long, and you know, people come to us and say, you know, how did I miss this? How did I, when I was dating this person, how did I not see that they're gonna make my life hell? So Bill Eddy and I wrote a book. This is the audio version, but it's called Dating Radar, Why Your Brain Says Yes to the One Who Will Make Your Life Hell. And we go through all of the high conflict personalities and kind of the characteristics of each of them, and then, you know, how we end up getting into them, you know, being vulnerable, what all are those vulnerabilities, being lonely, grief, things like that, just, or the charm of the presented by this high conflict personality. And there's a lot of case examples in there too, and that seems to be what kind of resonates with people when they read about themselves in a story. So, and then you can find us at thehighconflictinstitute.com. So that whole company, that the website is for professionals who, you know, we give training, consultation, things like that. By April this year, we're going to do something we've never done before, and that is launch a website just for individuals who are dealing with another high conflict individual in their life. So that will be called conflictplaybook.com. Nice. Hopefully by April.
Yay. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me today. Your knowledge is, you know, so helpful. And I know that the world will be a better place because of the work that you guys are doing. There's a lot of people hurting, and you guys are the light at the end of the tunnel. So thank you for all that.
Oh, my pleasure. And, you know, thank you for the work you do. You know, you're really doing important work. So hello to your audience. Thanks for listening, and thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you.